Hello, this is Roy Thomas, and you're listening to the Power Cosmic Podcast.
Hey, true believers, it's that time you've been waiting for. Gather around your iPod, radio, or whatever you're listening to, for Mitch and John are about to go into the Power Cosmic. Sit back and listen to comic books, toys, movies, and more with those two guys that've got nothing better to do but talk about the stuff that you love. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, wake the neighbors, phone the kids. It's time for the Power Cosmic Podcast. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Power Cosmic Podcast, the only cosmic podcast that's out there that I'm aware of. I am your host, Mitchell A. Halleck, producer of the world's greatest Comic-Con happening every August at the Mohegan Sun right here in Connecticut. It is called Terrific-Con. There's a lot of Comic-Cons out there, but there is only one terrific one, and that's the one that I put on. So don't be fooled by imitations. Go to the real one. And speaking of the real one, I am joined, as always, from my friend and yours, the kid all the way from the Raynham Flea Market, booth A89 and 90, where every Sunday he will reveal lost treasures of your childhood and maybe things you didn't know you want but you have to have. The one and only author of articles that appear in Back Issue Magazine, The Jack Kirby Collector, and Alter Ego, Roy Thomas's personal Robin, his sidekick, his Tonto, his Kato. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for the one, the only, John Cimino. Everybody's fine and dandy, John. John, I got a lot of talk about this week. We're going to make this a power-packed episode of the Power Cosmic. I'm going to start off real quick, and then we're going to jump into something else. There was a documentary that just came on. It's on Hulu, and I actually subscribed for 1 week only just to watch this, and then I abandoned it because I got too much other stuff to do but watch TV. But there was a documentary called Batman and Bill, or Bill and Me, and what it was the untold story of artist and creator Bill Finger, the ghost writer behind the Batman success, all the way back when Bob Kane first came up with it and took the credit all these low many years. And now, the truth be revealed, it wasn't all Bob Kane, it was the talents of Mr. Bill Finger. John, did you watch this documentary?
Absolutely, Bill. I'm going to call you Bill. And it's called Batman and Bill. I did watch it, and I watched it twice, and I thought it was fantastic.
Well, of course you watched it twice, because I saw Rascally Roy Thomas in there, amongst many of the other associates we've come to know through the years of doing comic book conventions and such.
Yes, and I actually talked to Mark, the guy that produced that, the guy that made that That would be
Mark Tyler Nobleman, author of The Boys of Steel.
I did talk to him. I congratulated him that he did a great job. But he told me that Roy was the first person he seeked out because he knew Roy knew more about history of comics than anybody else. So he was the first person. And he said this. What Roy said is what we all knew. Roy said, like, it was a dark secret that everybody in comics knew about, but nobody else did. So they all knew about Bill Finger over Bob Kane.
Well, you know what's a funny thing? Even as a kid, I was always, you know, because I was a big art fan and I went to school to be an artist and such. So I would always study old comic books and look at the different styles. And it always struck me as odd, too, when I saw the words Batman created by Bob Kane, because I would go, well, gee whiz, how does this guy draw so differently and such? Because it didn't look the same. And I'm talking about as a child, noticing there was something afoot. I had no idea what was going on behind the scenes. Let's tell people, if they don't know about this documentary, what it is according to Batman lore, Mr. Bob Kane thought of Batman all by himself. He said, you know what? I saw a Leonardo da Vinci sketch of a man with wings, and I said it looked like a bat. And then I thought about maybe making this character that stalked the night and was a crime fighter, and he became Batman. And that's what the general public knew, because Bob Kane perpetrated that story for more than 80 years or 75 years. How long Batman's been around, that's always been the true origin of what Batman was. And then Bob Kane rode that success through the 50s, through the 60s with the TV show, even up to the 1989 premiere of Batman with Michael Keaton. You saw Bob Kane on all the talk shows. He was the only one until his death in 1998. No one ever spoke of possibility that there might be another creator behind the scenes until this documentary comes out and points out that it was not all Bob Kane, even though that's what it said on the contract and the paperwork. It was the work of Mr. Bill Finger, who was a writer and an artist who actually came up with most of the Batman mythos, including calling it Gotham City, the Batmobile, Commissioner Gordon, Robin, the Catwoman, most of the entire Rogues Gallery. It's all due to Mr. Bill Finger, who went unnoticed because it was his job to be a ghostwriter. That's the way it was. They sent the papers in to get printed. It said Bob Kane on it. National Periodicals, which will become DC Comics, didn't really give a rat's ass who made the stuff. They just had to print it and put it out there for the little kids to read. And that's what happened. And over the years, Bill Finger just faded into obscurity. Correct?
Yeah, and what's interesting about that is I was at the flea market. I talked to a few people about it, and they would say one of these guys is a huge Bob Kane fan, and he says like, "Oh, is it all geared to Bob bashing Bob Kane?" And I said, "No, they actually use facts and all that stuff, and it's Bob Kane who is Bob Kane's worst enemy." Now, anybody who hasn't seen the documentary, I don't want to give you some spoilers here, but you have to admit Bob Kane, like, he was ruthless, and he actually felt sad in his later years about what he did, because it's a tragic story, you know? It's like what he actually did to Bill Finger, but because watching the documentary, you know how they shook in, they had a deal on how it was going to work, and Bill agreed to it. But it was later on when they started getting a lot of money, and then remember Bob Kane, they put that article out, how he said he was the sole creator of everything, and then that's when things got a little haywire and stuff, where he started getting all that money, because he didn't want to take anyone at all the adulation. And let me ask you a question, Mitch. Do you think Bob Kane wanted the creation? Did he want the money, or did he want the fame? What did he want more?
I think, looking at some of the documentary footage of Mr. Kane, I believe he wanted the fame. He was in love with the people knowing his name, walking into a room. He was, let's not say that he was not an untalented artist. The man had some artistic skills. However, he magnified them much more than they actually were and rode off the success of the Batman craze till he was the Michelangelo of Batman. They even said he thought he was Bruce Wayne and all that. He lived the life. He had that sophisticated look. You saw him with like a cape at the premiere of the film and a big white suit. Yeah, he looked like Liberace, like the entertainer. You know what I mean? The guy who was like, look at me.
Oh, yeah.
And not to insult the man, but being Italian like I am, or partially Italian, there's a word that we call a cavone or a spaccone. That means
Gavone.
Yeah, it's somebody who walks around, they'll wear gold rings, they'll wear gold jewelry, they'll wear this, they'll have fancy cars. They kind of like show off and say, oh, look what I got. I got more than you. I'm better than you. As if materialistic things mean more in someone's personal worth. And I kind of, not knowing the man, but I got that impression watching some of this film footage. I said, wow, what a spaccone this guy is.
And Mitch, I have to throw this out here. It's the history, like I said, I tried to go into there, like watching it. Like, are they going to be pro Bill Finger, pro Bob Kane? And just try to bash Bob Kane. But like I said, Bob Kane, the things he did and the actual facts about it, it makes you despise the man. And this is the other thing that drove me nuts. You can say everything is fake or all blah, 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 blah. I'm just saying, if those Bob Kane purists out there, and I know there's not many, but, you know, there are a few out there. You have to admit, when remember that drawing that came out that he said he created Batman back in 1934?
Yeah.
And then, and it had the bat symbol, and is it going to call it Birdman, Batman? Okay, so you can say whatever you want, if Bob Kane did this and that, and they're trying to bash him. But if you believe that horse manure of a fly or whatever, that page that he created Batman in 1934, you not only believe that he created Batman, but he created the whole superhero industry as well, because superheroes weren't even a ring in 1938. So you're saying Bob Kane created the whole superhero genre? It was such horse manure, and that made me think this guy is a freaking dirtball.
Well, not only that, you got to look at the time. You got to look at the time period. How old was he? Like 13 or 14 years old?
Yeah, so 14 years old, he created the whole superhero genre.
Let me tell you, my friend, in my experience as an art director and a creative director, I graduated college in 1989 and I went to work at an agency. And over my many years of dealing with artists and creative types and people that want to be stuff, you do encounter a lot of that. There's a certain hubris that goes along with people that have some creativity, but then there's just what we call an all-out hack. Okay, somebody who has no artistic ability, has no creative vision, has no gumption, who has no drive, that just sits back and tries to, almost opportunist, they try to take advantage of those people that do. Because most of the time, your creative types just have to get that energy out. They have to focus it. They have to write, draw, paint. Do a radio show. Do something. They have to get this out because it's kind of like a mutant ability. Okay, it's like your Cyclops, and you every time you open your eyes, the optic blasts are coming out. You have to channel that somewhere. Then you come across somebody who's a conniver, somebody who's a ruthless businessman. Okay, who just sees that and says, you know what? This guy's such a nice guy. He's so trusting. All he wants to do is draw, paint, and create, but I could sell that. I can market that. I'm going to try to promote that and say it's mine. And that's what I think would happen. I think they both met each other, both probably friendly to each other, but Bob saw an opportunity with Bill Finger's creativity and said, I'm going to run with this. And then through happenstance, it was a success. And then you can't turn it off. Like I said, you can't turn the limelight off. You're not going to share the spotlight. That's why it's only a one spotlight. It's not a double spotlight.
Bob Kane was also lucky. His father was an attorney, wasn't that?
Oh, absolutely. That's another big part of it.
He knew the business end of it, where Bill Finger didn't know a thing.
Yeah, because they all knew about how Joe Shuster and Jerry Siegel got screwed in the Superman contract. You know, basically they were work for hire, and they never saw any of the money from their creation of Superman. So Bob Kane and his dad knew this, so when they made that contract with National Periodicals, they made certain that Bob was always going to get the credit. In fact, it says created by Bob Kane, and that's the way it was.
Yeah, and what was interesting, too, is like when you actually hear like the footage, at the like the they were interviewing Bob, and he said that, you know, Bill actually did 50 to 75% of everything. He actually states that. And you want to know something that one guy I was talking to the other day said to me about that? He said, well, those things can be doctored up. And I was kind of like, if you don't believe that he would say, like, that didn't happen. There's too much evidence. And everybody always...
It was in his own book called Batman and Me, his autobiography. He put that in there. He said, years after his passing, Bill Finger's passing, he regretted that Bill did not share the success of his creation. So the man had the guilty conscience.
Yeah, see, okay, as egocentric and narcissistic as he was, it showed you he did have a little heart. I think exactly what you said is true. He got caught up in it. It was everything he wanted, and he just couldn't let it go. But you can see, at the end of his life, he was feeling a little guilty about it. So he did have a heart. You know what I mean? He did.
But it was too late. I mean, what good is that going to do anybody? The man is...
No, I agree. Yeah. No, I agree. Still a dick and all that for doing that. And it's so sad when you see Bill Finger. Even when he did the episode, the guy was... Remember, it was so sad he's watching...
Yeah, like he wrote the episode on the TV series called The Clock King.
Yeah, and he wanted him to at least have first billing on that. And it's a sad, sad thing, but it has a great ending. But still, Bill, you know, it's almost like unforgivable of Bob. It's just like, because he lived all the adulation. He got the money. He got to live. And he had the Playboy lifestyle. And it's just like, yeah,
I'm going to tell you something that I learned long ago, and a lot of people, when you work in a big creative industry, everybody has ideas, okay? Everybody. My dog wags its tail, I give it a bone, it thinks it's being creative, it's got an idea, okay? It's not about ideas. It's not about saying I invented the wheel, okay? What it is about execution and how you parlay that into success. And that is what we're looking at here. It's not the fact that Bob had the idea, Bill had the idea. What Bob did was he was more successful in executing upon that idea and making money off of it. So you can look at this as a double-edged sword. As much as Bill Finger goes through his life without any credit, without any but adulation from the fans, Bob is a master showmanship. He is a master, I don't know what you want to call it, but he's the guy that brought the Batman mythos to light. He was the one on TV doing the talk show. So he becomes the spokesperson for the Dark Knight. So in a weird way, you can't totally dismiss Bob Kane. I'm playing devil's advocate here, even though as much as I regret to say it, but Bob Kane is a showman, and he's the one that people see. Just like Walt Disney. Can you name me any of the artists that drew any of the classic Walt Disney cartoons like Pinocchio, Snow White, any of that? Give me one name. You can't. But you know Walt Disney. He's the guy that took those talented people, and he was the face of that company.
Right. I totally agree with you. But like I said, when he came out, when all this money started coming in and all that, and he went out in public, and he started saying, he did those, and remember, there's documentation of that he created everything. I created the costume. I did it. So he wouldn't share the money. That's when it really got bad. Because, that, like I said, what they did on a handshake and this, and he paid them, and they agreed to that, and that's fine, because Bill agreed to it. But it was toward the end, and it was just really, 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 that was dirty, man. Yeah. That's what,
But again, now the funny thing is, when I'm watching the show, you called me up and said you should get Mark Nobleman, the author, the guy behind the scenes that made this big crusade to get Bill Finger credit. You should get him for a Terrific Con. And the funny thing is, I went and looked in my emails. I had already spoken to this gentleman years ago when I was producing the earlier Comic-Con variations here in Bridgeport. What it was, he lived in Connecticut for a time, which is where we're based, and he wrote another book called The Boys of Steel, which was the history of the Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster story. And here's another thing. This guy finds out another mystery behind the history, if you will. In fact, that the Superman creators, the reason you know Superman's bulletproof, bullets bounce off of him. What this guy does is he goes and researches the history of the creators and finds out, you know, about how they made the book and how they didn't get their money. And even our good friend Neil Adams fought to get these guys credit. And towards the end of their life, they actually started seeing some money. But before all this, before the creation of Superman, did you know?
I know you're going to say, Mitch, I do know, but go ahead.
Did you know that Joe Shuster...
Father
is murdered in a robbery. Yeah. I believe it's a jewelry store, and he's shot and killed.
No, variety store. I think it was a variety store.
Oh, okay. So he's shot and killed in like 1933, which is a couple years before the boys get together and make Superman. So then the guy said his theory was that the whole idea of the fighting crime, being bulletproof, and you know losing your father and all that stems from this real life tragedy that happened to him. Did you see that?
Yeah, I knew that too, though. I knew that a long time ago. But another thing to point out what Mark does, he writes them in a children's story fashion.
Yep. That's why we were talking to him. He was actually going to come to my kids' school and do a talk about the Boys of Steel book.
Yes, and that's very interesting. Like, that's what those books, they're geared for kids. And so... that was very interesting, and that shows you a lot of creative talent for Mark. I mean, I got to give him props. Like, he got that information out as a children's book, and now it grew into, he got this documentary, all the way to getting credit for Bill Finger, and now we officially see Batman created by Bob Kane with Bill Finger.
Yeah, it's on the Gotham TV show, it's on the Batman vs. Superman. Wherever Batman appears from now on, that dual credit will appear. It's funny, you know, there's so much controversy around so many Marvel characters Stan Lee created with Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko. I wonder if those are future books and documentaries waiting to be had by Mr. Nobleman, perhaps not right now, but in the future. What do you think?
I think so. I mean, it's a crazy industry. It's a crazy industry, and it's a very collaborative industry. Like, let's also throw this out there. Me and Roy were talking about this. I can't think of his name. I think Goldstein, was it Sam Goldstein? Was he the colorist for Marvel at the time?
Back in the early 60s?
Yeah, in the early 60s.
Could be. Off the top of my head, I'll say sure, you're right.
Okay, but you got it. Is he a co-creator too? Because let's put this out there.
Well, let our friend Joe Caramagna be a creator, as he's the one that actually puts the words in the balloons that appear in the comics. Would he be the creator?
That's a little different. But I'm talking about, like, because the visual aspect, like, because this guy put Spider-Man blue in red. And, like, you know, when me and Roy were talking about this, he said, I believe that they have a part in the creation of the characters, too. You know, and, like, because that had a lot to do with it.
Well,
and,
yeah, that's true. You make red and yellow on the Flash, he's a good guy. If you make him yellow and red, he's now the reverse Flash, and he's a bad guy. So, yeah.
No, but the colors had a lot to do
with it. Well, look at the Hulk. He was gray, and then they had to color him green. Can you imagine the movies being made about the big gray Hulk?
Yeah, and once again, and Goldstein was the guy, I hope that's his name, but he was the guy that, you know, they did him gray, and he thought it looked terrible, and then he put him green. You hear all these legends that Stan Lee, or they thought the gray was, it was this guy's idea to do that. It wasn't Stan Lee. It wasn't, Roy told me that. And it's just like, I think they do have a part. It's a very collaborative field.
Well, you know what's interesting? When you think of Frankenstein, real quick, what color is he?
Well, he was green, yeah.
Well, he wasn't anything because it was a black and white movie. So it's amazing how the people persona just always assume he's got this greenish pallor because perhaps he's dead, and that's
the skin. But if you look at the color photos of him, I forget that famous makeup artist, he was green. He was.
I would take your word for it. I don't know off the top of my head, but I'm always amazed how...
Definitely take my word for it, yes. He was always painted green.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe that's because the way they did the black and white films, certain colors better showed up on the film.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree.
But people just always... Whenever you think of him, you think of him as green, Dracula is white-skinned, you know, pallor, and, you know, the Wolfman's always brown with green clothes on for some reason.
But thank God today... Is a day that where you have to admit, despite everything. I mean, I know the political climate, all this yada yada, but at least we're in a society that we believe everybody should get the credit they deserve, and like we're in a credit environment. Like, they want this guy to have his credit.
Everybody's patting themselves on the back. Everybody wants to be the mad scientist.
I mean, yes, it is a double-edged sword.
Nobody wants to be the hunchback.
Right, but everybody, at least, that they're getting the credit they deserve. And so it's not just Bob Kane. No. Now it's Bill Finger and Bob Kane. And it's the society that wanted that, too, because that would have never worked. That's why it would never
work. You know, I've worked with a lot of people over the years, and some of them, we would just, you know what, it's just your job. I was raised to believe it's just your job. You know, you go to work, you do the best you can, and you're rewarded with a paycheck and the self-satisfaction that you did a good job. At the end of the day, you can go to bed, you know, soundly. Some people I work with were not into that. They just wanted the adulation. They wanted to walk in a room and have everybody point to them and say, oh, do you know who that guy is? That's the guy. And as my dad put it in perspective when I was a young boy, he said, that and a dollar won't get you a cup of coffee. So put it in perspective. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like...
Those fans out there, Mitch, that like go nuts about like the Jack Kirby created this and Stan Lee didn't create this, you got to remember, and I know this for a fact, Jack Kirby knew that he wasn't going to own those characters. Jack Kirby knew he wasn't going to, like, he did the work and knowing that he wasn't going to have anything left to do with it. He was just doing the work to get the paycheck and all that. It was, and that is an absolute fact. And a lot of people saying that he took the credit for this, even Jack knew that, you know, the credit was going to go to both. You know, it's just, there's a lot of stuff people don't know out there, and people manifest stuff that say, like, this and that. Now, I'm glad that Jack gets the credit he deserves and gets the royalties he deserves, but a lot of people don't know what really went on.
Well, you know, you got to understand this, too, as you and I have discussed over the years, and we've had situations that arise, and you and I both know our back histories and stuff. You tell me the truth, and I always laugh about it. The average fan, the real fan who just, you know, just looks at this as amusement or distraction, doesn't really give a crap, okay? They just want a good story. They want a good time. They don't care about your dirty laundry. They really don't.
No, that's right. Just give me, like, and you know what? They don't need to. They don't need to, Mitch.
Yeah, like I said, if I go, when I was, my kids were little, I put in a Snow White or Pinocchio video, and they watched it for 90 minutes, and they loved it, and they were transported to a fantasy world, and they came off of that and played with the toys, and they just talked about it, and their imagination was stimulated. They didn't care that the writers or the artists over at Disney had a strike because the union wasn't getting paid enough by Walt Disney, and, you know, the guys that worked for him didn't like him. None of that matters. All that matters is the finished product, you know?
Yeah, and that's true. So, Mitch, to go back to Batman and Bill, how do you rate that? How many Mitchies up or down?
I'll give it a 4 out of 5. It was fun. It's fun when I watch these documentaries. It's not only that one, but there was one about superheroes a couple weeks ago on the History Channel that wasn't actually that good. It's just fun to watch these shows and know that I actually personally know or have met over the years a lot of these experts that are on these documentaries. And there was Roy Thomas talking about it. There was Mr. Arlen Schumer, who was a guest at some of my previous conventions, who lives in Connecticut as well. I think Neil on that show? I can't remember.
I don't remember.
And then they showed Denny O'Neill real quick. I saw a photo of Denny. And again, a lot of these guys took whatever creation Bill Finger and Bob Kane and made it their own. Frank Miller, great Batman story. Neil Adams, Denny O'Neill, great Batman story. Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo, who will be at Terrificon, great Batman stories. So it's kind of cool that, yes, Bill and Bob created that character, but so many others have taken it and reinvented it and made it their own. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. That's how the business works. You know, that's the model.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we don't sit there all day. I don't hear Scott Snyder said, well, gee whiz, you know, I'm making a Batman story, but really I'm only reinterpreting what Bill Finger did. I mean, that's essence what's true, but I'm reading this guy's new story, a new spark of life into a 70, 80-year-old character. That's why people like these characters. That's why people go to the movies to see Ben Affleck or Christian Bale or Michael Keaton. They don't really care about the actor, they just want a good Batman story, you know?
Right. They want to, you know, they want that entertainment to take them out of their daily lives. And once again, I want to go back to that Guardians of the Galaxy 2 we were talking about. That's the reason why I love that movie so much. It brought me into that world for 2 hours. It took me out of everything that was going on in my life. Me and my daughter just had a blast watching it. It was like a roller coaster ride, and it was so entertaining. It took me away, and then it got rid of all my problems for 2 hours, and I gave it a thumbs up because of that.
Yeah. And again, I don't want anybody to go, wow, those guys really dismiss all the creators out there. No, absolutely not. Don't be stupid. We all appreciate and we respect all the work that these guys have done, but I'm just saying over the years, it gets muddled, people forget, stories change, history goes on about its way, and then most fans don't even respect history. They don't even know. I mean, how many kids go to a movie like Guardians of the Galaxy and even know about the first Groot was in Tales to Astonish, number what, 13?
Yeah, 13.
That's what I'm saying, where Rocket Raccoon was in that terrible Hulk 261, 271. They don't even know. They don't care. They just want to go see a good story. I see many of these shows that I don't know the story of. I'm watching this one on Showtime now called American Gods, which is by Neil Gaiman. It's about superheroes and such. I never read the book. I don't read. I'm not going to go out and buy it. I'm just watching it. It's a diversion, a distraction. I don't need to know the entire library of Neil Gaiman's work to enjoy something that the guy put on, you know?
No, I agree.
But why do we watch these shows? Why do they make these Bill Finger and Me? You and I watched it. We loved it. And we were all excited. You told me about it. I went out and got Hulu just to watch it and stuff. I mean, is it like being a baseball fan? You go to the park, you watch the game. At the end of the day, what's what the score was, and if you had popcorn and peanuts. But other guys could sit there and talk about the entire history of the organization and every bunt and bat and all that jazz, you know?
Yeah.
I guess that's why. And here we are doing a podcast every week about comics. I guess we take it to the extreme. We're the enthusiasts. Yeah,
but we take it, at least what we do too is like, we do know the careers. We're not trying to take credit or not credit to anybody. The thing is, it's like, we do it because we love it, you know? We talk about it and we enjoy it.
Well, we love the characters.
Yeah, of course.
You know, that's what, as I'm sitting here at my desk talking to you, on my desk within feet, I have a Harley Quinn statue, I have a little Groot, you press the button, he dances, I have a replica of the Bat phone that's a bank, I'm surrounded by hardcover omnibuses of the Mighty Thor, Fantastic Four, Spider-Man. Everything we have, we love these characters so much. So to us, it's always it doesn't matter who's creating them, as long as they're still out there.
Right, because they are extensions of us.
Yeah, we all want to be that hero, no matter if it's Batman or Super. Hey, I don't want to be Batman, because you know why?
They made your parents were murdered. No, right, but not just that, though. We're also... They relate to us at an innocent time in our lives when we were growing up. They shaped us. We love those characters because they also remind us of who, you know, who we were.
And who we still want to be, actually.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's really nice. Good. Yeah.
All right. And as we come to another episode, I had a whole thing to talk about because I watched, of all things, when I got Hulu, I wanted to get my money's worth. So I ended up watching some amazing Spider-Man cartoons from the 90s, which I used to watch here and there, but I was too busy with life to sit down every Saturday to watch it. And here I am. I watched 6 episodes in a row last night, and it was a great one, and I want to talk to you about it. It was about the Captain America's Fighting America 6 or something like that. And what they did is they did an episode where Spider-Man and the Kingpin were after these amulets that they had to get together to take over the world, and it had to do with Captain America and the Red Skull. And not only that, it had to do with World War II heroes. It had Miss America, the Wizard, the Destroyer, the Black Marvel, and another character. And they were all on this episode, and I know that you talked to Roy, and I went and I started reading about some of the characters there, and I really want to get into it about some of the 1940s heroes that have gotten lost in time. But do you know? Have you ever watched that cartoon show?
Yeah, I did. But I, like you, in the 90s, I was kind of like out of. I was like, I had girlfriends and stuff, and I have to even remember. I remember seeing the Batman animated series. I never really watched that. I got into the animated series after it was already done, because I got into the Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, and then I went back. So like that Spider-Man cartoon that was going on at that time, I wasn't the 90s. I was in high school.
Oh, I know, yeah. That's what I said. We were doing other stuff. I mean, it's kind of funny to watch it now because I had it on and I was listening to it, and there's one scene where the Wizard, and they even talk about, why did you come up with a name called the Wizard, which makes my son Owen to this day laugh because as a kid he thought that was the funniest thing in the world. Not only was the guy called the Wizard, but his costume was yellow, so Owen had thought it to something with urination. But the thing of it is, he's an art teacher, and he comes up to a young boy who's drawing a picture, and he says to the kid, and it's in the episode, I think it's episode 5 of this 6-part series, he goes, wait, you're drawing it wrong. You can't draw characters that have small heads and giant fists and feet. That's not the way the body looks. And the kid looks and goes, that's not the way kids draw comic books nowadays, Professor Frank. That's how you used to draw. Now this is a whole new art style. And I'm laughing watching this because you know that was a direct jab at the times, which were the 90s when you had your Rob Liefelds out there drawing characters that were predominantly with small heads and giant fists, right?
Yeah, I know. That's funny.
Well, it is. I mean, I'm watching that bit of dialogue, and I said, I know that somebody threw that in there because they weren't happy with his the way he was drawing characters over at Image back in the day.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like, those are things sometimes. It's funny how that stuff was still being thrown in there, like, you know, back then. Like, they're throwing little jabs and stuff. It's something kids wouldn't even realize.
No, and we say back then, too, because we're talking 1992, 93. That's over 23, 24 years ago, you know?
I know, that's funny about that. But so did you like the cartoon?
Yeah, it was really good. It was, like I said, a lot of backstory. Captain America came back at the end. You know, anytime you see Captain America animated, it's always kind of cool. Even if it was those 1966 really bad artwork but good stories, Marvel superheroes.
That's why I used to love Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends back in the 80s.
Oh, yeah, he was on there a couple times. He's actually not had his own animated series after the 66 thing, which is interesting.
Yeah, but like I said about the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, you got to see characters you normally would never see, and that's what's the big deal. You saw Thor, the Submariner, like on TV. That was huge.
Oh, yeah, too. We should do a whole episode because we're almost coming up to the year anniversary of the Power Cosmic, and that's how it started. You and I sitting there talking about cartoons and how we watched The Thing, we watched Silver Surfer, even Spider-Woman had her own animated series. You were reminding me of that. I didn't know that. The Silver Surfer had one.
Kids don't understand today how spoiled they are with that stuff.
There are so many Marvel cartoons out there, I don't think a lot of fans even know about them all. God knows there's about five or six different Spider-Man shows.
Yeah, and I have them all. I actually, my cartoon DVD collection is so huge, but it ends, I literally, the last thing I've ever gotten was that, you know, that Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, that thing that came out in like the mid, you know, 2010s or something like that, before the new cartoons today.
Yeah.
I don't get any of those cartoons today, but I go all the way back to the 60s, all that Marvel and DC stuff. I have a huge DVD.
Even the Fantastic Four and Hanna-Barbera shows?
Yeah, I have all those things. Even Tarzan to the...
Oh, yeah, the Filmation Tarzan.
The Shazam cartoons. I'm looking at it right now. I mean, I have all the Batman, the Super Friends, all the Batman 60s stuff, all the He-Mans, the Captain Caveman's, the Johnny Quests, all that stuff, all the Space Ghosts, Thunder of our bands. But you want Mighty Heroes? I got the complete Mighty Heroes.
Oh, yeah, I love the Rope Man and all those guys.
Yeah, all the Spider-Man cartoons, and I also have this, Mitch. I have every single Spider-Man on the Electric Company.
Oh, that's something to watch. I'd like to see those again.
Yeah, I even have the Gary Coleman show, Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling. I'm looking at it all right now.
Do you have do you have Godzilla and Gadzooki?
Yeah, I don't know if you remember the Brady Bunch kids, but that's but I have all the episodes superheroes appeared on that show.
We met Greg Brady a couple weeks ago.
His voice is on that. Yeah. But I mean, I have all that stuff. All the Batmans, like I said, the Aquaman from the 60s.
We'll have to talk about those on another episode because we are out of time here on the Power Cosmic episode. So thank you, Mr. Bill Finger, for all the work you did on creating The Dark Knight and his long-lasting legacy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad he deserved that credit, and I'm glad he's getting it.
So somewhere out there, if there is any cosmic justice, he is watching it. Until next time, when we get together on the Power Cosmic, John, how do we wrap up the show?
And that's that.
This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.